both The Office and The Paper are ensemble shows with incredible comedic performers at the center of them.
Have you read this paper?
Uh-huh. It sucks. But we are going to make it better.
It felt like there was a lot of pressure on the show to live up to something that's so iconic. So much about comedy is rhythm. And what's a lot of fun, you know, in the original Office and in our show is often little side conversations or running gags or jokes.
That's what she said.
I'm so keenly aware of when people laugh that I remember it in my head forever. Creativity doesn't respond to the same motivators that other things respond to. You need to feel open to trying new things.
Welcome back to the Post Production Club podcast. I'm excited for you guys to hear from Julie Nicole Cohen, the editor for the new Office spinoff show, The Paper. She's an awesome, energetic experience and was just so fun to get to talk to. She, you know, comes from having worked on Project Runway, Space Force, Tell Me Lies, and a bunch of other stuff. We get to talk about the interesting challenge it is to follow up The Office with a new show and the challenges that come along with that. So without further ado, let's dive in. Well, hey, Julie, welcome to the Post Production Club podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Where does the podcast find you today?
I'm at my house in Eagle Rock, where I do a lot of editing in Los Angeles.
Do you have a studio set up, like space in your house?
Yeah, I have a little, it's kind of like a little closet. It used to be a little porch, but it got enclosed in like the 40s or something like that. And now it's my little editing closet and I love it. It's kind of in the middle of the house, which makes me feel like I'm part of the flow of things going on, even when I'm deep in another world.
Wow. It's like they knew back in the 40s that an editor would live there one day.
It's a very editor-heavy neighborhood. I know a lot of editors that live in my neighborhood and animators and puppeteers, a lot of creative behind-the-scenes people.
Nice. Are they like your friends or are they your enemies?
I mean, my friends. The great thing about the editing community is that people have very small egos that are editors. I've found, you know, because we have to make room for a lot of other bigger egos. So I really enjoy hanging out with editors. And I would say that like the majority of my friends are editors, which can be annoying for my partner because he has to be around a lot of shop talk. But I think editors are chill, you know, they're fun.
Insider baseball, I'm sure he is used to.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of that. Well, that's a lot of why we started this podcast is people in post are so chill and quiet about it. Like, that's why I wanted to help shine the spotlight on all of us and you guys and show people that this stuff doesn't just get magically made. I think with AI, it's only furthering that narrative that you just push a button and stuff gets made. But even that's a lie. So, I love that. And I totally agree. I have found that to be so true. The people in post are good people.
Yeah. Yeah. We like do the best with what we're given and we collaborate and, we go with the flow, you know? And I love that about editors and my friends.
So tell me, a little bit about what it was like working on The Paper, the new acclaimed follow-up to The Office. Like, tell me about what it was like working on that.
Yeah, it's been really, really exciting. I got the opportunity to do The Paper because I was approached by Dave Rogers, who is a director and producer and editor, and he comes from an editing background on the original Office. So he worked on that and has worked with Greg Daniels for many years. And I worked on a show called Space Force with Greg Daniels for two seasons. And so the first season I worked with Dave. So when they announced that they were going to do a follow-up to The Office, Dave reached out to me and I was very flattered, because who would not want to do such an incredible show? It felt like there was a lot of pressure on the show to live up to something that's so iconic, but it's been an amazing ride, because Greg Daniels and Michael Coman, who are the co-showrunners of the show, and Greg's obviously, you know, created The Office, created King of the Hill, is just an incredible EP and showrunner that's been creating the best shows on television, best comedy shows on television for many, many years. And then Michael Coman has a bit of a different background, where he comes from a more like hybrid and unscripted world of like How To with John Wilson and Nathan Fielder's show. So, you know, they came up with this idea together for a kind of sister show to The Office. And obviously it's its own show, and it's pretty different than The Office. And the only character that continues is Oscar. And so that took some pressure off of us to be making the same show over again. I mean, they were very clear. Greg did not want to repeat himself. He wanted to do something new. So yeah, it was really fun to be in it from the beginning, you know, working with Dave to figure out what this show was editorially. It's a lot of figuring out what this cast is doing and what bringing, because, you know, ultimately both The Office and The Paper are ensemble shows with incredible comedic performers at the center of them. And so figuring out how best to showcase them is a lot of what we're doing on the show and in editorial.
Talk to me about that process. How early were you involved? And then what did it look like to start going through all the footage? What team did you bring on? You know, what was your process like?
I was involved, you know, from, you know, shortly before they started production. So they, you know, invited me to the tone meeting. The other thing that's really cool on this show is that Greg Daniels invites everybody to the table read, and he runs it almost like it's a live comedy show. He announces each of the actors and the characters they're playing, and we all clap for them. And you can hear the laughter in the room responding to the different jokes on the page. And they do adjust the script based on these readings. And that's really, it's really exciting. It feels like you're part of something live and evolving and really part of a family. So it sets a tone of like editorial being there, like from the beginning, you know, and it really being important that sort of like everybody is laughing, you know, both the actors and the crew, you know, we're all here to make comedy that we love, that makes us all laugh. So that's really fun. And then I brought on my assistant, Brad Sheen, who I've been working with for a really, really long time. I've been lucky to work with him for, I don't know, like 8 or 9 years. So he's a really trusted collaborator at this point, and he's my first eyes on everything, you know, even if it's just like a little 5-second clip that I'm sending to somebody, I will ask him his opinion and he will give me notes. And he's also a great editor in and of himself. And he was able to co-edit with me episode 8 of The Paper. And that was a really fun collaboration. So we start, you know, early on with the tone meeting, where, you know, we get an understanding of what the tone of the episode will be. And in this case, you know, there was a lot in the tone meeting about maintaining like a documentary style in the shooting of the show. And we follow that up with, you know, a documentary style in the editing of the show. So, you know, tone meeting, readings, and then, you know, while they're shooting the show, we are editing it. So we start dailies the day after the first day of shooting. And I always try to keep up to camera, especially on a show like this. I want to make sure that if the director calls me wanting to know how did this work out, or if I need to flag anything that we might need while they're shooting, I can do that if I'm staying up to camera and knowing what has been gotten and what we still need. And then, of course, we go into, you know, the first cut is the editor's cut, where we're cutting according to the script. And in this case, on this show, because there's so much improv, I'm also showcasing the best improv in my cut. And then alternatively, I will also have, you know, alternate cuts of scenes a lot of times with different improvs or different directions, whatever I can have time to prepare. But yeah, I'm putting together that editor's cut, and I'm doing it in a way where it feels like, even though it's going to be long on this show, very long, these editor's cuts would come in the 40 to 50 minute range for a show that needed to be, you know, in the 20s. Yeah. So we do end up cutting them down quite a bit, but for the editor's cut, they want to see what's scripted. And then also, you know, you got to get that A level improv in there. Anything that feels as polished as what's in the script. But of course I don't try to repeat anything. So if there is, you know, sometimes I'll make some adjustments to the script if there's like, if it's an either or sort of situation. But yeah, so we have these massive, you know, editor's cuts. And from there, we start going into the director's cut where we're working with the director, and then the producer's cuts where we're working with Greg Daniels and Michael Komen, the showrunners.
How long were you guys in post?
Oh, a really long, that's a really good question. I've been thinking about that. It took a while for sure. You know, given that it's only a half hour show. But this is an editorially complex show where a lot can be done in the edit, and you can do a lot of rearranging, and you can do a lot of sort of rewriting in post. And that's why it took longer than your traditional, you know, half hour TV comedy. I couldn't tell you exactly how long, but a few months more.
Right. Nice. And you guys are fully wrapped on it. You're not still working.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We've been wrapped for a while, actually.
Tell me about how you got started into editing. Like, how did you find yourself behind a computer working on TV, comedy, films?
Well, I grew up really loving television, and I was kind of a latchkey kid. Both my parents worked. And actually, I grew up until I was 15 in Southern California. And at that time, my dad worked in post-production. He was an optical printer. Wow. And so that's like back in the day before titles and effects were done on the computer. They were done by shooting them into the camera. So like kind of layering on the effects and the titles and whatnot. And shooting that. It's interesting because he actually had a post-production job, but I believe he was not in the Editor's Guild. I believe he was in camera. So it's kind of like at a time when post-production meant a completely different thing. But then we moved when I was 15 to Florida. And I just maintained, I was so into TV and watched a lot of shows, and I would write my own TV shows and things like that in high school. And then when I went off to college, I went to Emerson in Boston and, you know, got a film school education and was able to make a thesis film in undergrad that I shot on 16 millimeter. And we had edited on flatbeds, and I had actually edited on a flatbed. I audited actually an editing class at Emerson because the editing class was full and I really wanted to take it. So I audited it, which was probably the best decision of my life.
I'd say, yeah.
And I learned how to do it. And then when I was making my thesis film, we were broken up into teams of like director, editor, producer, DP. And I was able to direct because I had written a short that got selected. But then the editor that was working on my short was clearly just not interested in the narrative because it was like kind of a female coming of age story. And he wanted to be on something where things were exploding or whatever. So he kind of checked out and I took over. And I remember going in the morning to start editing in the Bay and really enjoying it. And I got a little hungry and I went outside and it was completely dark. And I was like, what just happened? This is insane. This is magic. You know, the entire day had gone by. I had been editing. I had been loving it. I didn't even notice that hours had gone by. I was hungry. You know, it was crazy. So I kind of knew then this was a special thing and I probably would end up doing it for the rest of my life. And I am happy to say that I have, and I would like to continue doing it until like the day I die. And I think that's one of the really cool things about being in post-production and being an editor is you don't need to be able to even walk. You could literally do this from your bed and engage in these different worlds. So if it is something that you do love to do, it can be this special thing that you have for the rest of your life that you can do no matter what situation you're in. And I do find that like if I'm sick or if I'm depressed, I can come to the edit bay and I can leave all those troubles at the door and be just completely engaged in something else. So yeah, that's what happened to me in college. And then from there, I ended up doing some cutting of like small documentaries for nonprofits. And then I got into assisting in reality television. And I did that for about 10 years. I went from assisting to editing in a couple of years and then edited in reality television for about 10 years. And then I wanted to get into scripted because many of my favorite shows were scripted shows. So I reached out to the editor of my very favorite show, which at the time was Transparent. And that's Kate Haight. She edited the pilot. I kind of cold reached out to her on Facebook at a time on Facebook when you could do that and it would be seen. And she was so kind and generous. And we went to dinner and we found out we had this thing in common. Her twin sister was a casting director on Project Runway. I had worked on Project Runway for many seasons. So, you know, we realized we had both been at the Emmys together on the same year for her for Transparent, Me for Runway. And anyway, we had this connection. We really hit it off. And she was kind enough to ask me to be her assistant on a pilot. And that was an incredible opportunity. but also really challenging because I had not assisted in many, many years. So I assisted her on that pilot, almost got fired off of it, but, you know, really tried hard and tried to make up for my lack of remembering how to do things and the technology changing with working really hard and trying to do whatever she needed and anticipate her needs. And then we got through that. And then from there, she asked me to be her assistant on Transparent. And I got that opportunity, and I it was obviously a dream come true because this was, you know, my favorite show, and I got to learn from her, and it was a great experience. And from there, I sort of transitioned into scripted and ended up, you know, getting to co-edit with another editor on Transparent. And that was a great show to move into the scripted world from because it is a very challenging show that was heavily improvised. So it was using a lot of those skills that I had from reality and documentary editing where you're really piecing together this very complex puzzle. And doing a lot of rewriting in post. So I think for some editors that would come into a show like that, they would be very overwhelmed with the amount of footage. But if you come from a reality or documentary background, you're like not at all overwhelmed by that. And that's the same on this show, The Paper, to bring it back to The Paper. It's shot documentary style, so you have a lot of options. But I really enjoy that because of, you know, having worked so long in reality and documentary.
Wow. So going back real quick, what is the quick story behind you almost getting fired?
I mean, I just didn't, you know, I think... They had set us up with some computers that were really slow and I didn't quite like, you know, flag that early on enough. And so then we were up against deadlines, you know, trying to get cuts out by a certain time. And at that time we were making DVDs and physical, you know, versions of things. And yeah, so, I mean, it was just a little bit of a lack of technical knowledge, up-to-date technical knowledge. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the thing about assisting, it, being assistant editor is that the technology is changing so much every year and it's hard to get out of it and then come back into it because things are totally different. I mean, now an assistant editor doesn't have to make a DVD. As far as I know, I hope there's no executives out there still asking for DVDs.
Yeah. It's the new, like, get it printed to film, get it printed to DVD. It's like for a retro sake, nostalgia sake,
put it on VHS, put it on.
Yeah. Yeah. What is like an area of editing that you feel like the way we do things right now is still wasteful and could be made more efficient?
That's a fantastic question. I mean, as you mentioned, AI is going to change things, and I absolutely know it. And it's, we will see how that will change things. And I think for me, it is really important staying up to date with every tool that you have. You know, I cut mostly in Avid, but I also work in DaVinci and in Premiere. You know, I think one of the things that you'll see with DaVinci is that you've got now that they've built in an editing program into the overall program, you can edit and color and do audio in the same program. I do think that if there was a program where you could do full finishing in the same program, and obviously DaVinci is like, it's not nearly, you know, where Avid is at in terms of an offline editing system. But if we do have one fully functional post-production program, that's going to, that would be, that would really streamline the process, I believe. I'd have to get back to you on that, because I am often thinking about workflows and how to streamline things and how to become more efficient, because this is not just a creative job, it's also a technical job. And, you know, if we were still doing, you know, titles the way that my dad did them when he was optical printing, you know, things would take a lot longer. So you kind of have to evolve with the technology.
Yeah. And get to have a say in what problems you actually want the technology to solve, which is why, yes, I kind of like love asking the question. It's like you, me, we're all like in the trenches on this stuff every day. So I love hearing like, what problems are you experiencing that maybe I'm not, but is like, you know.
Yeah. One of the other things I would talk about in terms of, you know, finding cross-platform technology that can solve our problems of in post-production, specifically on scripted stuff, is to, it would be great if we had immediate communication across programs from the script supervisor to the editor. So it should be, because they're using their own programs, it should be that the program that the script supervisors are using automatically imports to Avid or whatever your offline editing system is. It could, there's no reason that couldn't happen. It's just that these programs were developed separately. But they are interdependent. You know, the script supervisor is the editor's advocate and eyes and, you know, liaison on set. So what they are working in should natively work with what we're working with, so that it's very easy to digitally see all of the notes that they're making.
But it doesn't.
It doesn't. And you know, there's there are different script supervising programs. That's the other thing, is not every script supervisor uses the same program. So there's no, not necessarily a standard there. And there's some that do it longhand. You know, I am not aware of a system that natively works. And I did try when I was working on Tell Me Lies. I was actually on set shadowing a director, and I made friends with the script supervisor. And we did try to do some sort of kind of complex system to bring in what she was doing. But it ultimately did not work and did not translate. We were not able to make it work. So, you know, if somebody knows how to do this easily and it, you know, all the information really does come through and is connected to the right time code, et cetera, and comes through the Avid in a way that makes sense, like, by all means, tell me about it. But in terms of my research to try to figure out how to do this, I kind of hit a wall.
Well, maybe that's a follow-up podcast, because that would be amazing. And I feel like that would really bring together a lot of different people's responsibilities on set, where that communication can very easily break down and be lost. So if anyone's out there and has an idea or solution, how to solve this.
I am a big advocate for like communication between the script supervisor and the editor, because I think, you know, generally it's just great to have the editor be more like involved in production and everything. But because the script supervisor is this sort of liaison, like, you know, we really should be communicating with them more, so that they're giving us more of what we need, and we're working in a symbiotic manner.
Yeah. And I mean, I was going to apologize for, you know, talking to in too much shop, but that's what this podcast is for. So screw it.
No, this is for all the nerds like you who are interested in this.
Yeah, exactly. because it's not just the script supervisor that's also doing a lot of the organization too. It's right. It's like, it's gotta be a few others. I mean, you would know better than myself. Would that be DIT, data wrangling? Like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, in terms of, yes, like, you know, DIT, sound, you know, in terms of like, we could be getting the reports, cam reports, sound reports, and that all of that all could be like some sort of digital seamless thing with editorial. Yeah, absolutely.
Because otherwise, when you jump in to the edit or even your AE, they're eventually going to have to be connecting with the script supervisor and DIT and all that stuff to kind of be like, what's the lowdown here, right?
Yeah, they're receiving emails with, or it's on some sort of drive or something with all of the reports on them, and then they're getting them, downloading them, whatever. But like, they're not necessarily in a format that can be brought into the Avid, you know? And then similarly, like in terms of pre-production, you've got script coordinator who's dealing with all of the different versions of the script. Now, the different versions of the script could be automatically updating in ScriptSync, for instance, or something like that. You know, that it would get complex because, you know, but these things are not talking to each other. That's my only point, is to say, you know, if you want to bring a script into the Avid, you need to get it in a TXT file to be able to bring it into ScriptSync. So it's like a very, that's kind of rudimentary way of doing things, you know. All of these things could be talking to each other, and they're not quite there yet.
There's a lot of programs, you know, Premiere and Descript, are really trying to bring in the ability to edit your video via text, you know, by having the script imported directly. I don't feel like it's made for a professional post-production pipeline at this point. It's kind of more in the content creation side of things. But yeah, that kind of opens up a whole nother, you know, can of worms too, as far as it relates to ways to solve the integration of scripting, script supervision into editorial.
Yeah, like in the documentary world, you'll often do large transcripts and, you know, like look at, you know, basically kind of like when you're going through material, just be going through large transcripts, highlighting things, putting them together, like doing a sort of version of what you're talking about. But I think that, you know, ultimately when you're editing something, you need to watch it because, just the content of what's being said is not the same as what's being communicated. It's a visual format. So you can say, I love you, and do it in a way where it actually seems like you're saying, I hate you, you know?
That's so true. So with the paper, I want to hear how you and your team have intentionally pay homage to The Office. But you talked about Greg wanting to do something new. And I kind of wanted to hear from you, like as you approached editing this, what were some of the maybe some new things that you brought to the show that you wanted to stand out, and kind of like the new next evolution of the show?
Yeah, well, when I first got the job, I was super flattered and I was really excited, and I had never watched The Office like straight through. You know, I had watched a lot of it, but seen a lot of episodes, but I had never intentionally sat down and watched it all. So I started doing that when I first got the job, and then I basically, you know, it took me the entire time that I worked on the show to get through it, because there's so much of it. And obviously it's a brilliant show that evolves so much through the course of the different seasons. So I started to get a feel for the style of like really looking at, you know, the style of how they use the talking heads and, you know, what the cutting patterns are and that sort of thing. than when I started working on the show. The first thing I did was I watched Dave Rogers' episode because he had cut the pilot. So then I could get a really good understanding of, you know, how this show is a little different. He'd already established using words on the screen, which is something you don't really see in the original Office, as a sort of like commentary from the documentarians, you know, that aspect of the documentarians, like having a personality is a real big part of the show. And, as well as each character has their own relationship with the documentary. So for Donal's character, for instance, he's often like hiding things from the documentary, trying to look like maybe, you know, he's a better boss than he is or something, or like more of a, he's just trying to come off a certain way. Esmeralda's character, she's often self-aggrandizing to the camera and like really like you get the feeling like she thinks that this is a documentary specifically about her. Mare's character is often kind of like amused along with the documentary. And so anyway, seeing how Dave set up in the first episode the relationships of these characters with the camera, you know, how often is he using a character looking into the camera and breaking the fourth wall? That sort of thing really helped me to figure out how to do it starting in my first episode, which was episode 2. And then that conversation continued to go along, you know, as I worked with the directors on the episodes for episode 2, that was Ken Kwapis, who actually directed the pilot of the original Office. So we had a lot of people from the Office who were also working on this show. Jeffrey Blitz, who directed the finale episode, also from the original Office, and Matt Sohn, who directed another episode I did, episode 8, was a DP on the original Office. And then also a director on the original Office. And actually his history is similar to mine in that he started as a DP in reality. So he worked at, you know, Buna Marie, which is a company I worked at many years. He worked there and Greg got him from there to, you know, get into DPing for the Office so that it had a, you know, a docu-style feel. So there's like this long history of people coming from the unscripted side into the scripted side through this mock doc world. But yeah, it was a constantly evolving conversation. And what I would say is that Michael Coman and Greg Daniels both were really like open to trying things and seeing what worked and making a lot of big swings in post, you know.
What was the most challenging part of the process or scene that you worked on?
The most challenging part of the process or like a specific challenge that I like?
Yeah, anything that comes to mind as far as a challenge that you faced in throughout working on the show.
I think that, you know, these episodes are so long. So when you initially cut them together. So a big part of the challenge is cutting them down, but still having them work. And cutting them down in a way where you're not just cutting for plot. Because that's the other thing that can often happen is if you just cut it down to the bare bones, but you keep all the plot, a lot of times you're just cutting all the comedy. And what's a lot of fun, you know, in the original Office and in our show, it is often things that are not super plot heavy things, you know, and that are like little side conversations or kind of running gags or jokes. So that was always something that was hard on this show because like the finale came in at 50 something minutes and these episodes were super long. There was an a sequence in episode 8 that I co-edited with Brad Sheen, that who's my assistant, and he cut this incredible montage of Ned selling toilet paper, and Donald Leeson killed it on this montage. You know, he was talking super fast on the phone, and like, it just, I mean, he could, you know, sell ice to an Eskimo. Like, he was so good, but we had so much more than we needed. And so figuring out the first cut that Brad did, because he worked with Matt Stone, who was the director who directed that sequence incredibly well. And they had a great cut of it, but it was longer than we needed it to be. So, you know, Greg and Michael were like, let's cut this down to like, you know, a third of what it is or something like that. We had to cut it way down. And then we also got some pickups. We had a storyline that we needed to kind of keep alive of Mare. They picked those up on the set. I had to cut those in. I also had to cut down the montage. So I had to do all of that. And I was really trying to keep the rhythm that Brad had established, because it's like the rhythm is part of what's funny. He's like selling like quick, 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 quick. And then one doesn't work. And it just kind of like everything stops for a minute, you know, like. So much about comedy is rhythm. And so it's a matter of finding that correct rhythm and the funniest rhythm while you're trying to balance all these other things and cut stuff down.
Yeah. Do you have any insider advice in how to cut stuff down? Like, how do you decide?
I love to get feedback. I am a big proponent of feedback, and especially in comedy. I think one of the great things about comedy is that I feel like it's almost like objective feedback of hearing people laugh. So if you show it to people and you hear their laugh, like log all of that, you know? I am so keenly aware of when people laugh when I show them things that I remember it in my head forever, you know? So I don't even need to write it down because I'm so attuned to it. So I will bring anybody in to the edit bay at any time to watch something. Not at any time. I mean, if I feel like it's, you know, ready to show people. But even sometimes when things, I know things aren't perfect, but I don't know in what way, I will bring people in. I will bring a PA in. We had a great post team on this that, you know, where we had a post producer and post supervisors and stuff that, the great thing on a Greg Daniels show is like everybody loves comedy. Everybody's creative. And so all of their feedback fed into this, and I would show to other assistant editors and editors and just try to get as much feedback as possible. And I don't take anything as Bible. Like, it's not like, I think sometimes people are afraid of feedback because they don't want to get like too many ideas in their head or whatever. But I think you have to, for me, I take it all as input, and I kind of see, okay, now I had two people laugh at this one joke. So I'm really going to fight to keep that, you know, with Greg. And, you know, the cool thing is that Greg and Komen were very open to feedback as well. So they would sometimes have multiple versions of things, like where I would prep like two or three different versions of something, and they would say, send that out to the whole post team and we'll get everybody to vote on nice. Which version they prefer, you know? So I do think, like, especially early on, get as much feedback as possible. You know, recently I got the opportunity to cut a network pilot, and I went through the network pilot testing process for the first time. And that included a lot of like two-way mirrors and an audience that each had a dial that they turn to the right if they think something's funny or if they like something, and the left if they don't. And that was such an amazing experience because I'd never gotten that fine-grained amount of feedback on something joke to joke. Mostly you're just waiting for the laughter, which, you know, everybody's watched things before that they think are funny, but they don't necessarily laugh out loud. Yeah. So that was cool to experience like a whole other level of feedback.
That's awesome. Yeah. And that was for this pilot?
No, that was Dave Rogers edited this pilot and it was a direct to series order. Okay. But no, that was for another pilot called Stumble for NBC.
Well, that is fascinating. Just kind of coming around to the close here, because I want to respect your time. What are some of your favorite TV shows and movies?
Oh my God. So many. I mean, less now than ever. I feel like there's just not as much being made, unfortunately, but there's still a lot of great stuff. I mean, the studio just, you know, won a bunch of awards. I thought that killed me. And also I felt like, you know, it's a lot to take on the industry, you know, especially for someone like Seth Rogen, and he did it and he did it well. So I was really impressed by that. But I love Hacks. That's, you know, one of my favorite shows on TV. And I got the amazing opportunity of working with one of the editors of last season that was nominated this year, Susan Vail. I worked with her on Space Force. So that was incredible. I do love The Bear. Yeah, I pretty much love grounded stuff that has comedy in it or that's fully comedy. So yeah, I really loved working on The Paper, and I hope people enjoy it as much as we did making it.
Definitely. I'm excited to watch it.
I also really love like Armando Iannucci's stuff, which I know he doesn't have like a show on TV now, but like Veep and things like that. That's another, like, it's like, you know, it's another sort of heavily improvised comedic style along the lines of like a Greg Daniels, but in a different sort of flavor.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's a really good show. I actually need to check that one out. That one's been recommended to me a ton. And I've seen a lot of things come out of the people that worked on that show because it made such waves. But yeah, I'm really excited.
I love heavily improvised things. There's a kind of intense realism that comes from that. And sometimes reactions or lines that are improvised will get a reaction that is totally interesting. I don't know. It kind of like, it feels more naturalistic than something that is super tightly scripted. Now, on The Paper, there are scripts. Like, believe me, there are scripts. And the scripts are already long. But to add in all of the little things that that these cast members are doing makes it even more alive in a way that is really fun.
One thing that I like to ask everyone that comes on here is like, if you could go back in time, what one piece of advice would you give to yourself as an editor, or what piece of advice would you give to up and coming editors right now that want to work in the scripted narrative or either unscripted, but just kind of work at a higher level in the industry?
I think that a big thing that I would say is to really be able to take notes with grace and be open to feedback and be open to trying new things. I think that can be easy sometimes to dismiss ideas because maybe you've tried something like that in the past and it didn't work. But the way you have sort of creative breakthroughs a lot of times is by trying something that you don't initially think will work. And so I think it's really important to take every idea and give it a fair shot. And that's how you grow as an artist and as an editor. And, you know, something that a editor in reality that was a boss of mine told me a long time ago is, you know, when you're given feedback about something, you don't necessarily need to tell the person who gave that to you why you initially did what you initially did. You don't need to defend your creative choices. You can make those creative choices, but then leave them to try something new. Obviously, if you're asked why you did what you did, go for it. But there's no reason to defend yourself. There's nothing to defend. No, you know, you're not being judged negatively for making an initial choice that may not have been the choice that the director or producer would have made. So I think that's really important. And the other thing I will say is that this is a creative job, and it's really important to allow yourself the space to be creative. And I think that a lot of creative problem solving has to do with keeping your mind open to possibilities. So a lot of times you'll see that if you're working in an environment where maybe they don't like your editing or they don't like your work, it can sometimes make you go into a place where you close off your creative, you know, mind, because you get so worried about doing the wrong thing. And being max creative, you have to be able to feel like you can fail and it will be okay. So whatever it takes to keep yourself in the right mental space to allow yourself to feel free, that's what you need to do. And for people giving notes, they have to remember that. Like they, you know, it's really important when people give notes to editors that it doesn't come from a place of like, you know, why did you do this? And, you know, sort of a accusatorial place, because you want to really encourage the people that you're working with to bring their creativity and bring their different ideas and their different way of looking at things. And I think you want to also safeguard that in yourself as a creative person, because creativity doesn't respond to the same motivators that other things respond to. You can't just motivate somebody to make create the most creative work by saying, I'm going to pay you more money, or, you know, or I'm going to punish you. That's only going to make you more nervous. You know, you need to feel open to trying new things. And so I think that's an important thing to remember when doing creative stuff.
Dang, Julie, you've been sitting on that this whole episode? Jeez. Can I come work for you? Sounds amazing.
It's fun. And collaboration, obviously. You know, a lot of people talk about that. But it's really fun to work in a creative field. I feel so incredibly lucky to be creative and to work with other creative people.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Julie, this has been a huge pleasure just getting to chat with you. Thank you. Love hearing your thoughts, love hearing everything you're working on, and really excited for the paper to get out there, make some waves.
Thank you. I feel like we didn't talk about it that much because we nerded out so much, but it was still fun.
Hey, yeah, that's great. I learned a ton about it.
And see what they think, you know?
yeah, exactly. Okay, well, this won't be the last time we talk to you. Excited to keep up and see what you work on next.
Thanks so much.